The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Welcome to episode number 100 of the Rental Income Podcast. I haven't talked a lot on the podcast about what I've been working on as I build out my portfolio because I want the show to be about the guest, not about me. But I have had a lot of people reach out to me to ask me to maybe talk a little bit more about what I've been working on. So I thought to mark episode 100, it might be interesting to bring on my wife, Suzanne, and we could talk about what we've been doing as we've been building out our portfolio over the last few months. So let's take a quick break. We'll get a word in from our sponsor. We'll come back and we'll talk about our portfolio.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Suzanne, when I first came to you with the idea that I wanted to rent out our house, were you scared at all? Did it seem risky that we would move into a new house and have tenants paying our mortgage at the old house?
At the time, we were living in a house that we'd had for about 10 years, and it just wasn't, you remember, it just wasn't meeting our needs anymore.
Right.
And the market, the real estate market in the area that we live in wasn't doing so great, so it wasn't really an option at the time to sell the house. But when we talked about it and we realized that we could rent it for an amount that was greater than our mortgage, and we realized, well, that would allow us to get into a new house. So, you know, that was a big part of probably why I was on board with it at first. But, you know, in addition, you know, the idea of getting maintenance calls at 3 a.m. or having tenants not pay or having tenants damage your property, those are, of course, concerns. But I think you figured out over the last 100 shows that those early morning maintenance calls don't really come or they're not that frequent. And, you know, the risk of tenants not paying or damaging the property, I mean, that is a real risk. I think for this first, you know, rental property that we were getting ourselves into, in terms of the market and, you know, the neighborhood and the market that we're living in, I wasn't as concerned about those other two issues.
Okay. Now, what about as we started buying more rentals and going into neighborhoods that were maybe not necessarily houses we would want to live in, that we figured out that we could make more money in neighborhoods that were maybe a couple of steps down from where we were living. Did it concern you that we were who we were going to be renting to, or that they would maybe be hard to rent?
Well, you know, by that time, I think, you know, we were enjoying having the rental income from the first house. So that certainly made me a lot more open to getting into more deals. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, I have my own job. And so I had to trust that you were fully invested in this and had done the research and, you know, had this under control.
So was it the money? Was it like when we got that first rent check and after we paid the mortgage and we saw that we had this pile of money left over, is that really what made you excited to want to do this again and buy more rentals?
I think so, because I mean that really opened up a whole new range of options for our future, and whether and you know how long we would continue to work and what kind of things we'd be able to do. And so once we started realizing, like one of your early guests mentioned, that owning these rental properties is a little bit like having an ATM machine. You know, once we realized that, it really just opened up a whole world of possibilities for us in terms of our future.
It really is exciting to have a rental property that just is spitting out money every single month. And it, just to let everyone know, in the last couple of months, we have gone on vacation that was totally paid for by the rental income. We just got new carpeting for our house, and that was totally paid for by the rental. So we were able to do more and to have nicer things because of the rental, and that's the rentals, and that's exciting, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about what we've done over the last couple of years, because we've made some changes to our portfolio. We ended up selling that first house, and we bought two more properties, and we've made a bunch of offers that haven't gone anywhere. And I've had a lot of people ask me to talk about what I've been working on. And I thought, being that this is episode number 100, it might be a good time to kind of take a step back and talk about what we've done here over the last year. So let's start with the house that we sold. Now, from your perspective, why did we sell that house? If that house was making us money and seemed to be a good investment, why would we want to sell it?
Well, you know, again, when we started out, it was making us money. We were able to pay the mortgage. We weren't, you know, the tenants were fine. We weren't having any issues with that. But as you learned more about, you know, owning rentals and about owning rentals for cash flow versus owning a property, hoping for appreciation, we realized that, you know, getting rent that exceeded the mortgage payment was really the wrong metric, that we shouldn't have been looking at that. And once we looked at it from a return on investment perspective, we realized that it really wasn't that great a deal.
Right. Yeah, it was making us money, but we could get a much higher return on investment if we bought another property. And I think that was kind of a function of the neighborhood that the house was in. Like, this is what they would call an A-class neighborhood. So it's a nice house in a nice neighborhood. And as you start getting down to more working class neighborhoods or lower income neighborhoods, your returns are going to be a lot higher. So that's what we did. We decided to sell that house. Now, it wasn't one day we woke up and said, we're going to sell that house. This was a debate that we had for probably 6 months that where we were deciding, what do we do?
Yes, over many months and many dinners.
And so when we actually, I don't know if you remember this, but we at one point we decided we're not going to decide what to do. We're going to let our tenant decide if they want to stay. That the lease was coming up, and we said, if they want to stay, we'll renew the lease. But if they want to go, we'll sell the property. And they kind of came back to us with a curveball. We didn't tell them we were thinking about selling the property, but they, when we asked them if they, what their plans were, if they were planning on staying, they came back and said, would you consider doing a 6-month lease? And that actually ended up being the greatest thing ever, because it gave us more time to get a plan together. And I think right after we signed that extension, we decided we're going to sell this house. Like, this just doesn't make sense anymore. We can make a lot more money with another property. So we sold that house, and it really, I guess the process of selling the house was pretty simple. Do you remember exactly how that went down?
Well, I remember it kind of being a whirlwind. It seemed to all happen sort of in the same week.
Yeah, it was real quick.
I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that you've talked about, or other guests on your show have talked about, is minimizing the downtime. So when you have turnover, you know, you can bet that there's probably always going to be a month where you're not going to have rent coming in for that property. And so I think we were really attuned to that and really trying to get things set up so that there was a minimum amount of time between when the tenant moved out versus when the property went on the market.
Right. And we didn't want to show it while the tenants were in there, because we had some carpeting that was kind of borderline when we were living there, that we probably needed to be replacing it. I think it was okay for a tenant, but if we were going to stay there, we probably would have replaced it. So what we did is we really planned everything out so that they moved out on a Tuesday. The following morning, Wednesday morning, we had new carpet installed. And then we had it in the lease that the tenants were going to clean the property. So Thursday morning, we had their maid come over and clean the property. And then Thursday afternoon, we had a photographer come over and take pictures. And then Friday morning, we got it on the market. And it was pretty quick, right? Just a couple of weeks from the time we had it on the market until we got an offer.
Yeah, it was, I think, about 3 weeks, which is phenomenal. I mean, pretty much in any market. But yeah. I remember you were, You had felt like you had priced it really well, ready to sell, and it took a little bit longer than you thought.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing with pricing a house is that you want to price it really competitively. I know a lot of times people will want to get every last penny and they'll price it at the upper end of the spectrum, but you want to get a house sold quick and you want to create a lot of buzz and excitement. So I think I priced it just a little bit low to get a quick offer. And we had a lot of activity, but yeah, I was getting nervous as the house was sitting there and we weren't having anything come in. So we got that house sold. We were done with it. And I guess when we were under contract to get that house sold, we were then ready to buy our next property.
Right.
And how did we find that property?
Wasn't that the off-market deal you got from this wholesaler that you knew?
Yeah, it was another investor. He had a property that he wanted to sell. And the property was in great condition. It was in, how would you describe the neighborhood? It's more of like a lower income type area, right? And it was an off-market deal. He already had a tenant in place. That the house was in decent condition, and it was really ready to go. But it was a much higher return on investment. So we talk about the 1% rule sometimes on the show. Is that being kind of like a minimum criteria to buy a rental? That say if a place is you're gonna buy it for $100,000. You want it to rent for 1% of the rent of the purchase price. So for a $100,000 place, you want it to rent for $1,000 a month. This property was just a little bit shy of the 2% rule. So it came in at 1.7%, which was pretty good. Just to give you guys some numbers, it's rented for $875,000. And we paid $50,000 for it. So that was a much better return than what we were getting on our old house. Although, I mean, it was a smaller amount of money, it was a higher return. And I think that's what we were looking for. Yeah, so that place, we've had that property now for, I don't know, 7-8 months. How do you think that's been going? Do you think this was a good decision to sell that first property and buy this one?
Well, you know, for the last year, I think it's done well for us. One of the things that we talk about, though, is that it's hard to tell, you know, if you're just looking at a 1 year period of time, it's hard to really evaluate whether something was a good deal. And I think it's really going to take until we've had that place for 3, 4, 5 years before, you know, we can really say this was a good deal or this was not a good deal.
Right. Yeah. But everything seems to be working out well. We have a good tenant. We've been getting paid every month. I mean, there's been some maintenance issues, which I don't like. It seems like every month there's something going on at that property. You know, they're minor things. It's maybe between $50 and $100, but I think that's to be expected. This is an older property, and I think that's just kind of goes with the territory.
You know, Dan, one other thing I'll say about this, and you may have talked about this before, I know you and I have talked about it, is that sometimes it's, you know, it seems risky to acquire more properties, but you have to look at it from the perspective of, you know, if you only own one rental property, anytime there's a maintenance issue, anytime there's a vacancy, it's going to have much more of an impact on you in terms of just psychologically how you feel about being a landlord, but also on your finances, than if you had 10 properties.
Right.
Because, you know, the chances of all 10 of those properties being vacant in a given month, you know, is practically nil.
Right.
So you're really spreading the more properties you have, the less risk you have in any one property.
That's true. And yeah, so that's why we're really working aggressively to try to build up our portfolio to get more rentals. Because yeah, we see that as being less risky. All right, let's talk about the next property we bought. So we wanted to also diversify. We wanted to have properties in a couple of different markets. Why did we decide that strategy was a good strategy for us?
Well, you know, I think we were just looking again to reduce our risk. And yeah, there are economies of scale to owning multiple properties in the same market. But, you know, if something, you know, goes bad economically there, you know, you sort of have all your eggs in one basket. So we felt by investing in a few different markets, we were actually taking on less risk.
Sure. Now, in a new market, there's a lot of neighborhoods to learn. What did you think about the neighborhoods we saw?
Yeah, the neighborhoods actually, you know, when we went to look at them, we thought, well, these are, you know, these are decent neighborhoods. You know, before visiting the city, you know, we had a, I guess, sort of a, an impression of the city that I don't know how accurate it was, but I think once we visited there, we felt a lot better. But even more importantly, like, we felt really good about the people we were working with there.
Yeah. So we met with a couple different property managers. We met with a couple different investors, and we felt really comfortable with our team that we had kind of gotten in place. So we didn't buy a property when we were in town, but when we came home, it was probably a week or two later, a deal came across the computer that I thought looked good.
Right. So, yeah. So that's the first property that we've owned that we have never even actually set eyes on.
Yeah.
Which is, that to me feels like the biggest risk that we've taken in this whole journey.
Right. Yeah. And we knew the neighborhood, and I think we felt comfortable with our team. We felt comfortable that the property manager felt like this was a good area.
The house was in really good shape.
Yeah. So I didn't feel like there was a lot of risk. I would say that I really wasn't nervous one time through that whole process.
Yeah, maybe it's more that I have maybe a false sense of security for these other properties that we own, that, you know, that they're within driving distance, that we could go see them. We could, you know, if we wanted to, we could meet the tenants. But I mean, honestly, we don't really do that. So I'm not sure why.
Right.
Probably a false sense of security.
Yeah. And that's actually an interesting point to bring up, is that, so we have made the decision not to manage our properties ourselves anymore. That the very first property we managed ourselves, it was a breeze. That there was never a stressful time with that property. But we made the decision that we want the rentals to have us live a certain lifestyle. And we want to be able to support ourselves off the rentals one day. We're not quite there yet, but that's where we're headed to. And so we decided that we were going to have property managers manage our properties so that we could kind of build up a portfolio that was very passive, that we weren't involved with. And I think that's a good decision. Yeah, I like not knowing the tenants. I like not showing the properties. I think that you don't have to be a landlord to be a property investor. And I think that's how I see ourselves, more as investors than as a landlord. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. So that's working out great. Now, you know, like Suzanne said, we're probably not going to know for a couple of years whether these were good investments, but for right now, that they're cash flowing great. We're really happy with them. Let's talk about some of the deals that we didn't get. So we've made a ton of offers over the last year, and most of them haven't gotten anywhere. We've made offers that on foreclosures where our agent has submitted offers for us and we just never hear back. I think probably the most noteworthy story is the market we were looking at. It was another area that was a few hours away from here. And we had a realtor in that area that checked out a property for us. And I found it on the MLS. She went out there, she took a look at it, and she came back. And do you remember what happened from there?
Yeah, we had a home inspection, and the home.
Well, I guess before even that, she came back and said, "Hey, this property is ready to go. This property is in great condition. You don't need to do anything. A tenant could move in here tomorrow." So we said, okay, we put it under contract. We thought the numbers looked good for us.
So then we had a home inspection, and we got the home inspection report back, which was very different. Mm-hmm. Probably, I would say, the key item on the home inspection report being that the occupancy permit for the house had been revoked.
Right. Yeah. The house was condemned. And the home inspector came back, and he was a real nice guy, and he had a real nice way of saying, this is not a good property. But I also had a property manager that I had developed a relationship with in this area. I had him go by to take a look, And he basically said the same thing. This house needs a ton of work. This house is not ready to be rented. And I really value the opinion of a property manager, because they're going to have to deal with this problem. This is going to be their problem. The realtor makes a sale, gets a commission, they're off to the next sale. But the property manager is going to be having an ongoing relationship with you in this property. So they don't want to get you into a bad deal. So yeah, when the property manager and the home inspector together told us that this house needed a lot of work, the numbers just didn't work anymore with the amount of money we were going to have to put into the property.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were fine with the neighborhood. That we didn't have issues with the neighborhood, but again, you know, we had made an offer thinking that the property didn't need that much work. And once we realized how much work it was, I think we actually went back and tried to revise our offer.
Yeah,
the seller was not interested. And so, right. You know, again, you just have to keep running the numbers. And
right. And
you can't get emotionally invested in a deal. And, you know, we are anxious to own more rentals, but you got to look at each deal in isolation and figure out, is this a good deal?
Yeah, and I think not getting emotionally involved or too excited, I think, are two really important things, because you really can't care if you get a deal. I mean, obviously you want to get it, but you can't get too excited about it. You got to look at it kind of logically. Does this make sense? Am I going to get the return that I want to get? And take it from that perspective. The next deal that's kind of noteworthy that didn't work out that I'm really bummed about is that the wholesaler that brought us a property. So this property was, I mean, just looked incredible on paper. It met the 2% rule. So it was that they were asking $75,000 for it. It was a duplex, and both sides combined were renting for $1,500. The house was in great shape. I mean, it didn't need any work. There were long-term tenants in the property. I mean, this thing just sounded almost too good to be true. Right. I mean, I was really excited about it. And I called the property manager. This is the same manager that we called before that I had developed a relationship with. And I just asked him, you know, what do you think about this neighborhood? Is this a good neighborhood? I told him the street that the property was on. And immediately he just said, no, like, do not buy that. That is in a really rough area. And he said it's hard to rent properties in that area, that he's had a tough time. And this guy manages a ton of properties, and he really, I think, helped us out, that like this property probably would have worked out well until these tenants left. And then we maybe would have had a tough time replacing them. I'm really bummed that didn't work out, but I'm really grateful at the same time that the property manager was able to advise us.
I think an important lesson from that story, and also from the property that we did buy that was out of town, is that you really need to have people on the ground that you can trust and that you can bounce ideas off of. And it's, you know, I think you always want to sort of get perspective from multiple people and not just rely on a single perspective, but
right.
really take advantage of bouncing ideas off other people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So I don't think there's any other noteworthy deals. I mean, most of the other offers we've made just haven't worked out, and it hasn't really, there's no real big takeaways. So from here, we're going to continue to buy rentals. I don't want to speak for you, but I think that I feel comfortable buying maybe two houses a year. Is that, and you know, maybe buy more if we find great deals, or if there is a market correction at some point, I would love to take advantage of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, I mean, that sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people get really aggressive, and, you know, they want to buy a ton of properties. And I know for me, I'm just not comfortable being that aggressive. Like I don't have a need to have a huge portfolio tomorrow. I'm content building it slowly over time. So that's kind of the strategy that we're working on. Well, Suzanne, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything else that you think we should talk about?
No, I think we've, you've done a good job sort of summarizing what we've been doing for the last year.
Awesome. Well, maybe we'll have you back on in another 100 episodes. So thank you for tuning in, and thank you for supporting the show. I'm so grateful that we made it to 100 episodes, and we will talk to you next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.